the business on RTE Radio 1 with Bank of Ireland. As Ireland's enterprise bank, we're lending to over 500 businesses and farmers every week. The business on RTE Radio 1 with Bank of Ireland. As Ireland's enterprise bank, we're lending to over 500 businesses and farmers every week.
Good morning. Coming up, when your job comes with a free house, Irish band The Pale on drumming up funding, and the man at the core of Greencore. You can contact us by text to 51551, by phone to 1850715150, email thebusiness@rte.ie, or tweet at thebusinessrte. But first, this week, the rich and powerful were all at the World Economic Forum at Davos in Switzerland. The official theme this year was the new global context. Sounds fairly edgy. Early in the week, Oxfam had warned that by next year, 1% of the world's population will own more than the other 99% if current trends continue. It also comes at a time when Barack Obama, David Cameron and Christine Lagarde are calling for an easing of pressure on the poor and the squeezed middle classes.
The numbers are quite striking, actually. If you take the 85 wealthiest people in the world, they can all fit in a double-decker bus, right? Well, they have more amongst themselves than half the population of the world. The poorest half, of course, but that's 3.5 billion people.
So what does middle-class economics require in our time? Middle-class economics means helping working families feel more secure in a world of constant change. It means helping folks afford childcare, college, healthcare, a home, retirement, lowering the taxes of working families and putting thousands of dollars back into their pockets each year.
Well, to look at how the squeezed middle and the poor are being impacted on, we're joined by Steve Keane, head of the School of Economics, History and Politics at Kingston University in London, and by Eamon Delaney, commentator and former diplomat. Steve, if I could go to you first. In Ireland, we've talked about this phrase, the squeezed middle, during the crisis and the last few years of austerity we've had. But it's interesting that it's a phrase that's being used internationally about the middle classes. What is happening?
Well, it's been a complete transformation of the social structure of our societies over the last 20 or 30 years from a whole range of factors. The middle class really was what made Marx's predictions about breakdown of capitalism into socialism false, because rather than everybody getting squeezed into proletariat at one extreme and a handful of capitalists on the other, you had this enormous expansion of the middle class, particularly after the Second World War and after the Great Depression, with the expansion of welfare and so on. And then the great growth in the need for bureaucracies inside companies as well. So this huge expansion of people who weren't on the factory line, who got fairly comfortable conditions, and whose incomes, you know, were required. You had to pay them to get the job of making a profit done. A whole range of factors have been causing a transformation there, but obviously computerization and the relocation of services and a lot of manufacturing to third world countries has just hollowed that out. And now you don't have that you've still got plenty of bureaucracies, but you don't have that same requirement that they are financed and paid well to make the businesses tick over. A huge part of that's been taken away from them. So you've seen an erosion on that front, and we've also had the shift away from the days of progressive taxation, where the taxation, particularly including things like inheritance tax, of course, redistributed some of that accumulated wealth from the top 1% back down again, and then that turned out through social security payments and so on into people's hands at the lower middle class.
Okay,
that's all gone.
Before we get to the top 1% issue, Eamon Delaney, as Steve describes it there, the plight of the middle classes, it seems as if globalization and greater trade, which allows for greater wealth to be created in many respects, but that's having an effect on the middle classes in companies and technology as well. There's just perhaps not the same need for the same numbers.
Yeah, the thing that makes that has benefited, as Stephen said, the middle classes to a tremendous extent in this country particularly, is also now having negative consequences. I mean, a classic example is yesterday in Monaghan. Bose, the maker of speakers, 37 years in Monaghan, employing 150 people, is closing and relocating to Malaysia and Mexico. And you know, that's 150 jobs gone. They would have been mid-class or well-paid manufacturing jobs. Manufacturing has been hollowed out in Europe, and what's happening in this country, because what we're benefiting hugely in terms of foreign investment is not really manufacturing, if you apart from parts of computer components. So these are the lessons that we, you know, the benefits that we'd had to create middle-class prosperity is now the thing that's is threatening us.
As Steve describes it, and as you give that example, let's say, of a quality manufacturing product in a place like County Monaghan in Ireland, that doesn't sound fixable. That doesn't sound like it's possible to change that trend.
It's not, maybe not fixable, it's manageable. I mean, we have to accept the consequences. We've signed up for what has been very beneficial to Ireland in terms of international capitalist culture, if you like, entrepreneurial culture, large multinationals, and you know, they do have the right, if they see their profits margins going down and if they can get things made more cheaply in other parts of the world, to relocate. And we've done this in the past, we've cried and protested, but generally we accept it, actually, I think, because we see ourselves as the beneficiary. I mean, we're the beneficiaries of American jobs, for example, which have come
here.
Sure,
there are lots of other jobs coming to Ireland, and some of them are involved in manufacturing here and quality manufacturing as well. Yeah, Steve, I just want to talk there. We had those clips from Barack Obama and Christine Lagarde, sort of about the top 1%, or in Christine Lagarde's case, she was on about the 85 richest people all fitting on the double-decker bus. How big an issue do you think that is in relation to this rich-poor divide, separate to the question of whether the middle classes are getting squeezed in there?
Oh, it's getting enormous. I mean, one of the most interesting articles written recently on this was by Nick Hanau. You probably don't know his name, but he's the venture capitalist who funded Amazon and is a billionaire several times over, and wrote a wonderful little article, so he said, which he addressed to his fellow billionaires, and it was called "The Pitchforks Are Coming." And he said, the only in the past, when this level of inequality turns up, and it also means that large numbers of people are feeling economically insecure, that's finally led to a breakdown and revolt. Now, I don't think we have pitchforks like back in the 1500s, but what he's saying is a breakdown of respect and a breakdown of political power is coming their way. And if they don't actually redistribute some of what they're accumulating, then we're in for a very fractious future.
But at the end of the day, having a rich elite is not a new phenomenon. And in a modern context, a more recent context, having a very small group of people with such a huge amount of money, there are certain financial risks taken. They are rewarded. That is the capitalist system. And the hope is that it lifts and raises all boats. And there is evidence raising standards of living for people.
Yeah, that's the story which we sold ourselves in the last 40 years. And let's put it a bit in historical context. Jamie Galbraith has done some wonderful work on the level of inequality globally, argues that we are now in a period of higher inequality than any time in human history, including when they were building the pyramids in Egypt. That's so the level of social inequality.
I just want to bring a name here.
That's simply not true. I mean, Stephen, come on. I mean, there is now less inequality in the world in general, globally, because the developing world has so caught up, because we've had booming economies in China.
We've had that change in the distribution internationally.
Let me finish the point, because
class structure is different.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about prosperity generally. I mean, we have China, India, Russia before the recent Crimean conflict, all catching up. So
about the 85 richest, as Christine Lagarde opened the conversation with.
You're moving back
with.
To a different part of the argument now. Being,
no, I'm
missing
the same part. You're the one who distracted the argument. About the inequality between individuals.
Okay, Stephen, just let me finish at least one point. Your point about inequality in the world has grown. It hasn't. Inequality within Western economies has grown. This is definitely true, because the middle classes have been so savaged and feeling the pain. And it's true that the rich have got richer because they've accumulated more wealth. That's globalisation. But globally, there has been a huge shrinking of the inequality gap. Look at Africa booming. I mean,
Countries, yes. I'm not arguing between countries. I'm saying between individuals. And that's the argument you're getting out of Oxfam, and that's what you got out of Christine Lagarde a short while ago. 85 people in one double-decker bus was a very good analogy versus 3.5 billion.
But Steve,
that
is, it,
that is that I'm going to trust Jamie's data on this rather than what you're telling me. And Jamie said it's the most inequality, and he's done the research, the most unequal time in human history in terms of that individual distribution of wealth and power. And but why that would is what's causing a large part of the social breakdown these days.
Yeah, well, why would so a number of individuals, let's say, and by the way, the 1% could quite easily include me, you, and Richard here. I mean, that 1%.
No, I don't think so.
Well, it's a large one, possibly Ireland.
I wish academic salaries were that good.
Well, I mean, the 1% is quite different to the number of individuals that fit on a bus. But even
yeah, that's 0.001%.
But does it really matter that there are people who are super wealthy? Like, is it a matter of us being offended because there are people who are super wealthy? You know, should we not focus on the general distribution of wealth? Like Dennis O'Brien is an Irish tycoon. Is that money taken from other people? Do you know what I mean?
Well, no, it's also a question of the extent to which that money redistributes in cycles. And I recommend a very good recent book to you by a friend of mine, George Cooper, called Money, Blood and Revolution. Now, it sounds like something about political overthrow, but he's making an analogy to the way we understand how the economy operates and how they used to think blood flow worked. And it was all the case of thinking how the blood flow went from the feet to the head or something like that, which, of course, doesn't work. You have to have it circulating through the entire body. And what we have happening here is more and more of it accumulating in one spot and not circulating back. The top 0.001% don't spend enough of what they accumulate, and we're not redistributing that as we used to in the 50s and 60s. And the lack of that redistribution is a major factor in why we're having the level of economic stagnation that we're having today.
Steve, is there an issue the top 85, as Christine Lagarde described it, makes for a very good headline because it's so dramatic and making a point? But there's an interesting article in the Irish Independent newspaper today by economist Dan O'Brien, and he makes the point that in Ireland, for example, the top fifth income earners, the top 20%, earn just under five times what the bottom fifth earn. And if you want to talk about the top 1%, he's giving it an Irish context, that the tax system in Ireland takes more from high earners than it does and takes less from low earners than any other country in the OECD. That if you take away the top 85 in the world, but if you actually look at the top 10 or the top 20%, the picture might be a bit different.
Yeah, but it's more really about a case of just how effectively does money circulate? We've certainly got wealth accumulation systems well and truly nailed. If you look at the last 40 years of policy, it's all about making it easy for people to accumulate and hang on to what they accumulate. We've neglected the need for that money to circulate as well. We've taken away a lot of the mechanisms such as progressive taxation and such as inheritance tax. And, I'm amazed that I've got to actually make some of these points in the context of Piketty's book recently, which makes precisely these points.
Did you agree with Piketty's book, which was saying that inequality globally is growing?
I didn't, broadly speaking, but I didn't, and I thought there were a lot of flaws in Piketty's thesis, but I thought it was more nuanced than the discussion we're having here. He was talking about...
It's a radio show. That's a 700-page book, which is very hard to read, I might add, but
his point was that I think a lot of money is being accumulated by the super wealthy and not being spent by, you know,
that's
for further enterprise. And that is an issue, and we see it a lot, and that's a problem with, you know, in terms of banks, financial services, money is being accumulated and just allowed to rot rather than being put back in as it should be. And as I would argue that it has been to the benefit of people in Eastern Europe and Russia and Africa, China.
I mean, just on that point, I mean, I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said that the creation of real wealth, two key words were industry and frugality. And certainly among the top 85, perhaps there's not a lot of industry at times and definitely no frugality.
Well, you mean in terms of their own habits? Or?
Yeah, in terms of lifestyle and perhaps even how they accumulate.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, a lot of it is given back in philanthropy. You know, we see the Bill Gateses, we see Dennis O'Brien, we see people like that setting it. I mean, I don't think we should... Is it a matter of us being offended by the image and what these people do? It's like you follow a football team. Does it matter to you that Ronaldo or someone is on a massive salary more than the guy who's at full back? No, you want results. You want everyone to benefit. The more jobs are being created globally and nationally, the better.
But that's the issue. Now, is this a
Finally
system that's just promoting job creation, or is it slowing it down?
We're
certainly in the West and to some extent now in China as well, not doing so fantastically on job creation distribution on wealth and distributing that wealth. And this is the issue. Does that level of inequality lead to a lower level of economic performance when all the arguments in favour of it were that led to a higher level of economic performance?
Okay, I'm afraid we'll have to...
That's what Piketty's talking about.
We'll have to wrap it up there. Steve Keane and Eamon Delaney, thanks very much for joining us on the programme.